Will you tell me something, Mr. Lumberjack? Is it one for forward and three for back? Is it two for stop or four for go? Boy, ask a whistle punk, I don't know. Well, you work in the woods from morning to night. You laugh and sing and you cuss and fight. On Saturday night you go to Eugene. And on a Sunday morning your pockets are clean. Will you tell me something, Mr. Lumberjack?
Little Johnny Cash to get you in the mood today. Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Get you in the mood to talk about the timber industry. Jerry Apps, our guest today, to talk about his latest book, When the White Pine Was King. And it was king, and we'll learn a lot about it when we talk with him. But first I want to talk to Jill Nadeau. Jill, hi there.
Hey, Larry.
Good to hear your voice, and it's good to have her with me today because it's our Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Member Drive. You count on the Ideas Network for great discussions, and, you know, your gift, any amount, makes these discussions possible. Listener support, it's the largest source of funding for our programs, and that's why your support at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 is so important. How are we doing, by the way, Jill?
Well, last hour we heard from 13 new and returning members, so thank you so much for your gifts. And right now, Larry, this is pretty exciting. We have a dollar-for-dollar match for up to $4,000. This generous match is from current members, including a member in Manitowoc, and it means that they'll match every dollar that you give.
It's their way of encouraging you to join them in supporting Wisconsin Public Radio, so you can double your support for the programs you love just by giving now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You know, you enjoy listening to Wisconsin Public Radio in part because we're commercial-free. That means that we depend on other sources of funding. State, federal, and business sponsors are all important. And there's another source that's very important, too.
Yeah, that's right. The largest piece of funding for our programs comes from you. Your support makes all the difference. It's the backbone of how things work around here. And when you give, you keep the quality, the independent talk, the information, and the entertainment on the air. So make your gift right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio is your radio station, one that wakes you up in the morning, rides with you on your commute, and keeps you company during the day.
And I think the beauty of WPR is that you get to decide how much to pay for the programs you enjoy. Many first-time donors, they give $100 or maybe they give $10 a month. You pick the amount that's right for you.
And your gift, along with donations from other listeners, adds up to WPR's largest source of funding. So join the team right now. Make your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
This drive, donate any amount, and you could win $1,000 to buy a bike or accessories. What would you buy?
I would buy one of those tandem bike attachments. My three-year-old, he'd love it if he could just bike right behind me instead.
A brand new saddlebag? Mine is so worn out.
Don't tell my other bike, but I would definitely upgrade to something newer.
One lucky winner will receive a $1,000 gift card for Wheel and Sprocket to spend on their new bike or cycling gear. Sustainers, you're automatically entered. Find out all the details at WPR.org/drawing. You can't win if you don't enter. So make your gift of any amount right now. Here's how.
Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 to make your donation in support of the programs you count on. Larry Mueller here with Jill Nadeau. Your support today of Wisconsin Public Radio keeps all the programs you enjoy going strong. And whether you contribute $10 a month or $100 a month or anything in between or more, we appreciate and we count on your gift.
Giving to WPR is super simple. All we need is your name, your contact information, the amount of your gift, and how you'd like to pay.
Just takes a few minutes to make your contribution to WPR, and those few minutes fund your daily listening. Your support right now really makes a difference. Go to WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. You can phone us.
That's right. And remember, we have a dollar-for-dollar match going on this hour, so there's still plenty of room for your gift to be matched. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and your support of WPR will go twice as far.
And as an added bonus for supporting these programs you love, your donation enters you in a drawing for $1,000 to spend on, I don't know, bikes, cycling gear at Wheel and Sprocket. No contribution necessary. You can go to WPR.org/drawing for details. But you know what? Better yet, you're automatically entered when you give any amount at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And of course, sustainers making ongoing monthly gifts, you are automatically entered.
Absolutely. And if you're not a sustainer, we'll become one right now. It's easy to set up. It's monthly donations from your bank account, excuse me, or credit card at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And it's a great way to provide ongoing support for the programs that you love. Like Tina in Pleasant Valley says, Larry makes me feel like everything is going to be all right. I learned so much and his guests are thoroughly enjoyable. That's so true, Larry. Everybody likes us. We're kind of like a little oasis in the world, right? We're an oasis.
We are indeed. And I tell you what, your gift is very powerful. It really does make a difference. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 and make your contribution right now. I'd love to hear from you. And Jill will be back. We'll talk with her a little later on. But right now, I want to turn my attention to Jerry Apps, back with us. Professor Emeritus at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, the author of many books on rural history, country life, and the environment. And we're talking about his latest book. It's titled When the White Pine Was King, A History of Lumberjacks, Log Drives, and Sawdust Cities in Wisconsin. So, what would you like to know about life in the logging camps? I hope you'll join in the conversation. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@WPR.org. And Jerry Apps, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. Thank you, Larry. Glad to be along.
I tell you what, I really enjoyed your book. I knew a little about the logging industry, but I learned a whole lot more from reading a very, very entertaining read. And you say, I think pretty early on, that white pine really was king and had a lot of advantages to other timber.
Yes, it did. And in fact, in the 1840s and on up to almost 1900, a little bit beyond, white pine lumber was the premier lumber for building homes and businesses all over, really. The lumber from northern Wisconsin, the logs from northern Wisconsin ended up in places like St. Louis and Chicago and all over the place. So white pine was the premier tree of its day, no question about it.
Yeah, and we wouldn't have some of the industries. I think about the paper industry, for example, we wouldn't have it unless we had the white pine.
Well, that's true. The paper industry came a bit later than the logging industry, but it was a direct result of it. Yes, indeed.
Yeah. So what was northern Wisconsin like before the loggers arrived? Talk about that.
Well, interestingly enough, I have a map in the book for Wisconsin in 1838. And in 1838, which is just two years after we became a territory and 6 years before we became a state, almost all of the settlement in the state was east of the Fox, Wisconsin River waterway. And anything north of that was Native American country, and it was essentially all trees, with white pine being one of the predominant species, but there are other kinds of trees as well. Most of the hardwoods, with some exceptions, were here in southern Wisconsin. But it was the white pine that was the predominant tree species in the north. And when the in 1838, there was really very little activity beyond the Native American activity. And I would add this, the French explorers were here for some time, 100 years or so, and they were working their way through the north, not settling, not cutting trees, but trapping, and that went on for some long time. But the logging industry really didn't begin until, about the 1840s, just about the time that we were becoming a state.
Yeah, and how did it evolve that way? Why did it happen in the 1840s?
Well, it evolved in a couple of ways. First off, there were treaties, all kinds of treaties with the Native Americans. That had to happen first to make it illegal to go into the North. And once those treaties were settled, then there were a few entrepreneurs who saw these trees as especially the white pine, as a possible economic source. And interestingly enough, the early loggers were not Wisconsin people. Our many of our early settlers, they didn't know much about logging, and so the early loggers in Wisconsin came from New England, from Maine and New Hampshire, and even from eastern Canada, where logging had already been quite a predominant activity. So our early loggers were made up of people who were invited to come here to Wisconsin because they had the skills. It's not an easy thing to cut down a pine tree that's white pine tree that's 100 plus feet tall. It's quite a trick. And our farmers here in southern Wisconsin and south and northeastern Wisconsin, they were accustomed to working with hardwood trees because to clear their land, they often had to cut down the oaks and so on. But the idea of working in the woods and cutting down a white pine tree, that was new. That was special.
We have a caller online, Osawa Namaki, a Menominee Indian Reservation person. Let's go there. Hello, thank you for calling.
Also, Larry, and to your guests, I would like to ask this question of your guest. The Menominees practice a number of different means in harvesting their logs, and I wondered if there's anybody else in the world that have encompassed all of these practices, and I'll name them for you. Of course, there's seven generations philosophy. There's the dead and down, there's the sustained yield, select cut. The science of harvesting the lumber is also prominent there, obviously. You got to know what type of soil you're working with in order to produce a pine, a white pine, correct? So I'm wondering if anybody in the world has that many different practices going on all at once as the Menominee Nation has.
Osawa, thank you so much for calling. Jerry?
Yeah, let me comment. I'm well aware of what you are talking about. In fact, I have most of a chapter in my book talking about the Menominee experience and how the Menominee tribe, was one of the earliest to practice sustainable forestry. And we're indeed, as I talk about in my book, we're a model for how forests should be managed for sustainability and all the rest of the things that you mentioned. So I appreciate very much your question. And even though when the loggers went through the north, as the caller is probably well aware, almost all of the reservation was spared. They did not clear cut their trees, as was often the case in the north. So they indeed were an example and a model for the logging practices that we deem important these days.
And thanks again for calling. Jerry Apps, our guest today, author of When the White Pine Was King. Great to have him with us. Great to have Jill Nadeau with us as well. And here we are in our Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Member Drive, Jill.
Yes, we are back again. I don't know if you knew this, Larry, but listener support makes up the largest piece of funding for the programs that you count on, like the Larry Mueller Show. Mm-hmm. And that's why your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so important.
We have a dollar-for-dollar match in effect right now from current members, and including a member from Manitowoc. Your gift of $50 will turn into $100 or $100 into $200 and so forth. So take advantage of this match right now and double your support for Wisconsin Public Radio programs when you give right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You know, on this program, we cover topics like environmental and consumer issues, gardening, how-to topics, Wisconsin authors, and Wisconsin food. And when you listen, you learn. And it's possible because of your financial support of Wisconsin Public Radio. So support this program and all the other programs that you enjoy on the Ideas Network by going to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
You might have a monthly subscription for your cell phone or maybe Netflix, and now we're asking you to support WPR like you pay for some of the other services you rely on.
And the difference here is that you decide how much to give. So support the programs that are a part of your day and not have to think about it because you can become a WPR sustainer. So choose a monthly gift amount that works for you and then set up ongoing installments at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
This member drive, stay hydrated with a pair of WPR steel pint cups. These stackable clean canteen cups are the perfect fit for your outdoor adventures and everyday use. With their eye-catching geometric design, your WPR pride will be on full display. Ask for yours today with your gift of $20 a month or more.
Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552, and you can have those cups. You can take a little drink after you chop down one of your trees. Larry, Jill does that all the time. Larry Mueller here with Jill Nadeau. Oh, man, I tell you what, listener support is the biggest source of funding for our shows, the ones that you rely on, and that's why your support's so important. Maybe your gift is $10 a month, or maybe it's $100 a month. Whatever amount you choose is the right amount for sure.
And we have a dollar-for-dollar match up to $4,000 in effect right now. So that makes it a great time to donate because current members, including a member in Manitowoc, will double every dollar that you give. Now that is a deal. It's their way of inspiring you to support Wisconsin Public Radio. So double the impact of your gift right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
$10 a month contribution to Wisconsin Public Radio, that works out to just, 33 cents a day?
Yeah. That's a great deal.
Yeah, you can make a gift of $10 a month right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552, and you'll get a lot in return.
Absolutely. And our dollar-for-dollar match is on right now, and I'm looking at the screen. We still have a little over $3,000 left in that pot. So ooh, all you have to do is, that's a lot of money. So you make a pledge of whatever it is that you think is right for you, and our friends will double that. So please give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Your support will go twice as far.
Yeah, show your support for WPR and ask for those new stainless steel WPR. What are they, pints? Are there pints?
They're pint. They're a pint set. There's two.
they're stackable, clean canteen cups. They're perfect for your favorite beverage. I don't know what you like, Jill, but beer in one of those wouldn't be bad, I don't think. Well, not at this hour of the day. Whatever you put in them, they're yours when you give $20 a month or more. So go ahead and do a $20 a month contribution. We'll send you the cups. just go to WPR.org, WPR.org, or phone 888-202-2552.
Well, and, you know, if you're a sustaining member, and you're making ongoing gifts, thank you. But, you know, you could always increase. We appreciate that. Maybe it's $5 or $10 a month, whatever amount that you choose, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And, you know, Darcy from Richland Center says, from WPR, I learn about an incredible range of subjects. And as a former librarian, yay, librarians, I appreciate an information source that I can absolutely trust. That says it all, Larry.
Yeah, it does indeed. Your gift right now, so important, at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And thank you so much for contributing. So happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here and talking today with Jerry Apps about his new book, When the White Pine Was King, A History of Lumberjacks, Log Drives, and Sawdust Cities in Wisconsin. Give a call with your questions or maybe an experience to share at 1-800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org. And let's take a call. Connie in Portage, we'll go to you now. Hi, Connie.
Hi. Well, it's nice to talk to my two favorite people. I love Jerry Apps, everything he's ever done. And so the reason I called is, are you going to make a film of that so I can buy it?
Not that I know of, but who knows? The COVID pandemic has a lot of stuff on hold. And my filmmaking is one of those things.
Yeah, it's one of those that's a little on hold. I tell you, in the meantime, get a copy of the book. There's lots of great photos. I love all the old photos
that you got in the book. Those are absolutely fantastic. I was privileged, of course, in working with the State Historical Society. They published this book, the Historical Society Press, to have access to all of these photos. And I tell you, they have a wonderful collection of old logging photos. And if you want, this is a terrible thing to say, but if you are a picture looker rather than a page reader, these photos will tell you a lot about the logging industry.
They will indeed. Well, you know, those photos, you look at the photo and say, oh, I got to read a little bit about this photo.
Well, I would hope so, but we know how that works.
Yeah, and I did want to mention the cover, too, because I love the cover with the two loggers on logs in the river somewhere. And where did that come from, Jerry?
Well, I don't have his name in front of me, but there is a chap in northern Wisconsin, an artist, who paints these kinds of pictures. And he wrote to me when he heard I was working on this book, and he said, Jerry, I've got these pictures, and I will give them to you to use in your book. And
wow.
He did, and he did that, and I wish I could find his name real quick, because he deserves a lot of credit. Those are fantastic.
John Betcher, wasn't it?
That could be. Anyway, it picks up the quality and so even the emotion. Can you imagine what it was like to ride on a log that's roaring down the river, and you've got a long pike in your hand with a pointed metal end, and you're trying to steer these logs along. It's one of the, I can't imagine any job more dangerous.
No, and there was a lot of people that were injured and killed.
A lot of them were killed. It was that dangerous.
Jeff in Wausau. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, in the back of the picture, we see people riding in one of these early canoe types. And they followed along the guys riding on the logs, but that's another story.
Jeff in Wausau, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Jeff.
And a story well told, Mr. Apps, as ever. Thanks so much for sharing everything you've learned. You're quite a guy.
Well, thank you. Appreciate that.
Yeah, not said enough. Let it be said more. I remember you had a book release at Yankee Bookstore just last year, and I was wondering if a place like that, 100 years in the same family on the same street, going back to the lumberjack days, if those brave adventurers would hop off on the banks of the Wisconsin River and walk on over to 3rd Street and Yankee Bookstore.
Yeah, Yankee's bookstore has this book on stock right now, and they are one of my premier northern Wisconsin booksellers. Jane has been very helpful. Previous to this book, I wrote the history of the Civilian Conservation Corps, the CCC, and the Yankees have that book as well. And you may have been in the audience when I was speaking at the Historical Society there a year ago. My gosh, we had 150-some people turn out to learn about the CCC. There's a tremendous, as there ought to be, a tremendous amount of interest in the logging industry and anything and everything associated with it throughout Wisconsin, but especially in the north.
Yeah. Jeff, thank you so much. Tom in Tomahawk, your turn. Hi, Tom.
Hello. My great-grandfather came here in the late 1800s to make his fortune in the lumber industry. I know he acquired land. The family story, it got lost. There were 1,500 acres of his land covered with virgin forest that was just stolen by another company. And there was no legal recourse. Is there any substance to that?
Probably. There was a lot of skullduggery going on in those days. There was even the logs going down the river. There were thieves that would steal the floating logs. I mean, it was something else. There was very little law. Can you imagine any sheriff wanting to end up in the North Woods going after someone who was stealing lumber? But they should have, and, well, they didn't. So there was a lot of the story is probably true. There was a lot of skullduggery going on.
Yeah, unfortunately. Well, Joe in Star Lake will give you a chance. Hi, Joe.
Yeah, I'm an old-time musician, and there's a lot of songs about morphine, and I'm thinking about the opioid addiction now, but this is old stuff, and I'm wondering whether, because there were so many injuries in the timber camps, whether morphine addiction was an issue, if you've ever come across anything like that.
You know, it could very well be, but I did not run onto that in my research. But the injuries were many, as you might guess. I mean, it's just inevitable. Still today, the logging industry is one of the most dangerous occupations that you can take part in. So the injuries were taking place. And I'm not surprised to hear what you're saying, but I do not have that in my book.
All right, Joe, thank you so much. Let's talk about the camps a little bit. You got some great information about what the camps were like, Jerry.
Well, I was very intrigued. My grandfather was a logging camp cook back in the late 1800s. And I wish I had been old enough have enough sense to ask him about his cooking stories. But the logging camp generally had about 25 or so lumberjacks. But the king of it all, the person who received the highest salary, happened to be the camp cook. If the cook failed, the logging camp failed. So the meals were pretty outstanding. And can you imagine what it was like? Wood stoves, no electricity, lamps and lanterns, and the cook is trying to feed 25 of the hungriest men you ever could imagine. Because if you're working out in the woods and it's 35 below zero and you're cutting down trees and you're doing it all the daylight hours, my gosh, you come into the mess hall and you're starved. And so the cook was the king of the roost, so to speak. And can you imagine what it was like living in these are log buildings, of course, and the bunkhouse had these 25 men, and they never bathed. Oh my gosh, they would bathe in the spring, but between the winter there was very little bathing taking place, and their socks were constantly, often, almost always getting wet. So if you'd come into the logging camp, into the mess hall, or where the men were sleeping, the smell of woolen socks drying would, along with the smell of the unbathed loggers and the wood smoke, I mean, it had to be quite an experience for any visitor, and there weren't very many visitors, of course.
Oh, my gosh. Jerry Apps, our guest. His book is called When the White Pine Was King. Give a call with your questions or comments at 800-642-1234 or email at ideas@wpr.org. Bob and Claybanks read a few years ago the largest white pine found in Wisconsin was in Door County. Know anything about this? And if not, those trees at the back in the day were just enormous.
They were, and I have a picture, several pictures of these trees in my book. They were enormous, and, well, to cut one of them down, mind you now, there were no chainsaws.
Yeah.
There was no mechanical equipment whatever in the early days. It was horses and oxen and cross-cut saws that took two men, one on each handle, and axes and sleighs. I mean, it was very fun. And I hate to fess up to this, but it's pretty much what it was like when I was a kid on the farm. That's how we did our logging.
Well, I have a chainsaw, actually. And if I ever have trouble with my chainsaw, I always go to Jill Nadeau because she's the chainsaw maven. If you have a chainsaw problem, go to Jill. Because
it's funny, Larry, because my dad sold chainsaws. I know how to sharpen a chain.
Well, I know. If I've got a problem with a chainsaw, I'm coming to you. And here's Jill sneaking in to talk with us about our fall member drive. We're here today to raise the money that pays for the programs you enjoy, programs like this one. So I hope you'll support us. Support from people like you, it's the largest piece of our funding for our programs, and that's why your support at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 is so important.
And remember, we have a dollar-for-dollar match in effect right now from current members, including a member in Manitowoc. So that means that your gift of 50 turns into 100, and 100 turns into 200, and so on. So take advantage of this match and double your support for Wisconsin Public Radio programs when you give right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we haven't moved very far. We're at about, we still have a couple thousand, maybe even $3,000 left in there. So go ahead and make your contribution now. And just think about this program. Jerry Apps, I love talking to Jerry. He and I visited on the air many a time. And I know from just the kinds of comments I get from listeners that they appreciate it. And all the shows that we do, I think, benefit you as a listener. How's your life enriched by it? How's it unique to public radio? WPR is listener supported. And so when you give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552, you make this hour with Jerry Apps and many more hours possible. So choose an amount that works for you. Take a couple of minutes and make your gift.
And you know, once in a while, you actually get more than you pay for. Well, WPR is one place where that's true every single day. So consider a gift of $2 a day to support the programs that you love.
It's hard to buy much for $2 anymore.
True,
but at Wisconsin, but at Wisconsin Public Radio, $2 a day makes a lot of news and talk and music possible. And that's $60 a month. And you can make that gift at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
I started donating quite a few years ago. I took the plunge. It was the first thing that I had ever done with the sustaining type of membership. It was painless, and so I've just continued. I trust Wisconsin Public Radio. I also trust them to use my money wisely. I'm Bea Liebel from Merrill, Wisconsin. I encourage you to join me in sustaining Wisconsin Public Radio.
Join Bea. Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 to make your donation. Larry Mueller here with Jill Nadeau. Your support during our fall member drive makes the programs you rely on possible. And your gift might be 10 or 20 bucks a month. Whatever amount you choose certainly is the right amount.
Absolutely. And you know, and after you've made your donations to WPR, you can make your gift go further by telling your friends and family.
You can use social media. You can call them up or mention it when you see them. Just letting your friends and family know that you support WPR, that will help plant the ideas in their minds.
So that's right.
Make your gift.
Sounded kind of evil there, Larry. I don't know.
We've got... Get that in their heads. And then they'll go like you to WPR.org or they'll phone 888-202-2552 and make their contribution. What about you? Go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 and make your gift.
And if you're not a sustainer now, it's time to become. It's easy to set up monthly donations from your bank account or credit card at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And it's a great way to provide ongoing support for programs you love. And we got Mike in Arizona who says, I moved to Arizona 11 years ago and still listen to Larry Mueller. And Celeste in Potosi says, I'm so enriched every day by the knowledge I get from Larry and his expert guests. Oh, wonderful. Yeah,
thank you so much, Celeste and Mike. Your gift is very powerful, really makes a difference at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And thank you.
Will you tell me something, Mr. Lumberjack? Is it one for forward and three for back? Is it two for stopper?
All right, little Johnny Cash to get us back into our conversation with Jerry Apps, professor emeritus at UW-Madison, author of many books, including the one we're talking about today, When the White Pine Was King, A History of Lumberjacks, Log Drives, and Sawdust Cities in Wisconsin. Jerry, we have lots of callers online, so I think we'll go back to the phones.
Larry, let me mention who the cover the cover artist was. John Boetcher, Boetcher.
Yeah, I was pretty sure that was that, right.
That's who it is.
John in Oconomowoc, we'll give you a chance to join in. Hi, John.
Hi. I've got a brief question. I'm just wondering if your guest encountered the name Ezra Cornell in the history of logging of northern Wisconsin.
No, of course. Ezra Cornell, of course, associated with Cornell University, his land grant from the 1862 Land Grant Act, his land grant was in northern Wisconsin, where Cornell, Wisconsin, now is located. So old Ezra Cornell did well in Wisconsin.
Yeah, and then he went back to New York and founded Cornell University with all the money he made from here.
It was founded before that, but he built a lot of Cornell on the backs of Wisconsin lumber.
Yeah, he did indeed. Oh, and there were some other people. Weyerhaeuser was one of the kind of the, you write about in your book.
Weyerhaeuser was a very important logger.
Frederick,
And what he did, which was typical of some of these logging firms, when things ran out in Wisconsin, he moved on west, left us behind. That happened with several of the loggers.
Dean in Wausau, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Dean.
Hello. Is this actually Dave?
Sorry.
Yeah, this is Dave.
Okay.
I'm just calling to highlight that a lot of river raftsmen were killed in the mid 19th century, such as my great-great-uncle, was killed, and they thought his body was just buried somewhere in Maryland. They never saw him again. So that would be, I'm 57. My dad would be 100 if you were alive. My grandma was born in 1888, so it was her uncle. And he just, she just told dad that, yeah, he just was killed in the river. They threw his body in the ground and never saw him again. But that's how dangerous it was driving the pine logs on the Wisconsin River. You know, you just drowned or get crushed, and that was the end of you. So,
I have a lot of information about the log drives and the log jams. And one of the sort of sad, well, it's sort of, it is sad stories is on many of the turns in the rivers, like the Wisconsin River or the Wolf or whatever river they were doing log drives, on some of the tight turns, often that's where there was a difficulty, some kind of a log drive, a log jam, and on the hill above the that turn was where these loggers were often buried if they found the bodies. And that was a kind of a gruesome reminder, I think, to the log drivers who would come down the river and see on the hilltop on a bend some of these makeshift crosses, et cetera, where their colleagues were buried.
Yeah, and those log jams, you write about the height of some of those.
Oh, the height and the length, my gosh, they were hundreds of yards long. And the most dangerous thing in the world was to try and undo a log jam. And one way they did it, there were specialists, quote unquote, who could take apart a log jam. And you're looking, always looking for the key log, the one that caused the difficulty. And some of them, when dynamite became available, they just blow the dang thing up. And can you imagine what that was like if you're anywhere near what all of this is taking place? So the log jams, the stories of the log jams are many. I think it was up in Eau Claire. People would get on the train, and they would ride up to where there was a log jam, and they would watch the loggers trying to take it apart. I don't know.
And they'd get maybe 400 feet high.
That's true. Because, you see, the log drives took place in the spring when the rivers were high with meltwater, and they were roaring and racing, and so things were moving quickly. And if a log got stuck on a rock or whatever, they quickly all piled up, and that's when you had these enormous piles of logs that were a real threat to everything.
Let's go to Katie next in Hogan. Hi, Katie.
Hi, good morning. I am sitting here in the cottage that my great-grandfather built back in 1912, or at least that's when it was finished. Beautiful spot, right on the point. Unfortunately, I have to fly back to Florida tomorrow. It's only a summer cottage. But my question is, my understanding is there is winter logging that went on during this time. Is that true?
It all took place in the winter. Yeah. All of the logging in those days was done in the winter. None of it, entirely all, but until the railroads came in about the 1870s or so in the north, the logging was done in the winter because the ground was frozen and there was snow, and you could use sleighs to haul the logs to the riverbanks, and which they did, and there weren't any mosquitoes. They didn't have that problem. The problem they had, I mentioned this earlier, can you imagine working out in the woods when it's 30 below zero? My gosh. But that's what they did. And then they hauled the logs to the riverbank. And when the ice went out in the spring, they dumped the logs in the river. And that's when we had the log drives. And nothing happened. And then summer. Summer was nothing in those days, before the railroad came in and before the chainsaw became available and before the modern day logging equipment we have now, where the person cutting the tree sits inside of a cab and isn't bothered by mosquitoes.
Katie, safe journey back to Florida. Thanks so much for calling. Scott in Maguanigo, your turn. Hi, Scott.
Hi. I've got stories from my grandmother about her grandfather and great-grandfather that originally came from New York City, were ferry boat operators on the Hudson River, came to Wisconsin in the 1870s and lived up in Eau Plaine area, and ran, and she told stories of log drives down the Wisconsin River. My question was, where were the mills located? Where did these logs all wind up? I know that they later became lumber dealers in the Dubuque area, but did they go down that farther or further down the Mississippi?
That's a good question, because it depended somewhat on the river as to whether or not the log drives would go all the way down. They did. Some of them went all the way down to St. Louis. They put them together into rafts. But interestingly enough, I'm looking at this number. In 1849, there were 47 sawmills on the Wisconsin River alone. Why was that? Because it was crooked, and it had all kinds of impediments and little waterfalls and all that kind of thing. And so wherever there was a difficult place in the river, they often used that site to build the sawmill. So again, there are 47 sawmills on the Wisconsin River alone in 1849.
I get absolutely amazing. Scott, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Jerry Apps, our guest, the book, When the White Pine Was King, A History of Lumberjacks, Log Drives, and Sawdust Cities in Wisconsin. And Jill Nadeau, her dad, and a lot of her family actually worked in the logging industry. And so Jane Rotunda always likes to, we talk about lumberjacks, but when we refer to Jill, Jane always says, well, Lumber Jill. He's a Lumber Jill, not a lumberjack. And here she is again, snuck back in to talk about your support for the programs here at Wisconsin Public Radio. Your support is the largest source of funding for our show, so give right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And Larry, between sharpening my axe, I noticed that we made our challenge with the $4,000 funding. So thank you so, so much if you contributed to that. We so appreciate that because it's so important because, you know, you were able to double your support for Wisconsin Public Radio programs. Now, that doesn't mean that anybody else shouldn't call because we would appreciate that too. So give us a call right now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And I hope you'll call with your contribution or go online for it because of the show's benefit to you as a listener. How's your life enriched by it? Listening to great guests like Jerry Apps talking about Wisconsin history, really, the logging industry. We are listener supported, and that means when you give at WPR.org or maybe a phone, 888-202-2552, you make this hour and many more hours possible. So choose an amount that works for you. Take a couple of minutes and make your gift.
And don't forget, if you give $20 or more a month, you get some cool bling, a pair of WPR pint cups. Now, they're stackable, made out of steel. They're called Clean Canteen Cups. It's a brand name. They're perfect for everyday use or your next outdoor adventure, like going out and chopping wood. Support the programs that you value and show your love for WPR with these trendy cups. It starts with your gift of $20 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Now let's admit it. Sometimes we spend money on silly things.
I have definitely bought some crazy clothes.
It's a little thing, you wind it up and it goes across the top of the table. She broke it in the first 5 seconds.
Silliest thing. It was Kahlua.
It's pretty easy to make a questionable decision about how we spend our money, and it can be just as easy, and not a bad idea, to make a few sound investments along the way. Like supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. Listener support is the single largest source of funding at WPR, so make a sound investment with your gift to WPR right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And in case you missed that, go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 to make your donation in support of the programs you count on. Larry Mueller here with Jill Nadeau. Your support today of WPR keeps all the programs you enjoy going strong. And I don't care if your contribution is $10 a month or $100 a month or $200 a month. I don't care. We appreciate it. We count on your gift.
We absolutely do. And thank you again to all those who donated to help us with the dollar for dollar match of $4,000. We did make that, but you can still get your those really cool little cups, those pint cups. So you can always do that with a gift of $20 or more. You can do that at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You've kind of made a habit of listening to Wisconsin Public Radio, so I think it's time to get in the habit of donating. It's a good
habit, yes.
Good habit. That's right, a habit you can be proud of. So get started right now. Help out with your donation of any amount at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And remember, if you're a sustaining member making ongoing monthly gifts, well, thank you so much. Thank you. Think about making today the day you increase your support for WPR by $5 or $10 a month or whatever amount you choose. And that's at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And, Connie from Middleton says, I know that WPR will bring me information and joy each time I turn it on. Bravo to the entire team who fill our ears with expert choices.
Will you tell me something, Mr. Lumberjack? Is it one for forward and three for back? Is it two for...
Johnny Cash bringing us back into our conversation with author Jerry Apps. His new book is called When the White Pine Was King, and subtitled A History of Lumberjacks, Log Drives, and Sawdust Cities in Wisconsin. Great to have him with us. And certainly looking forward to hearing what you have to say about that time period. And Lynn in Oshkosh is up with a question or a comment, so let's go there. Lynn, hello.
Hello. Hi.
What's on your mind?
My parents had a place up in Forest County when I grew up, and there was a couple, Leona, which was up there on Highway 8, and then Long Lake, which was on Highway 139. We were right in between that in a little town called Newald, which is where my parents' place was. And there was always talk of in Long Lake that they had a camp there for the Germans back during World War II. And my question is did they use any of those prisoners for work, or and I know they said they would watch them play volleyball and things like that, almost like a source of entertainment sometimes. So,
yeah.
And also one more thing: there was a pine in Forest County near Newald called the MacArthur pine that was supposed to be the largest pine in Wisconsin at one time too, and it was always a ride out on some roads that were gravel. But we found it, and it was marked as one of the world's largest white pines.
Oh.
So that's my comment and my question.
Oh, thank you very much, Lynn. Well, Jerry, a comment.
Yeah, first to reply to the POWs working in the woods, I did not find evidence of that. That's not to say that it didn't happen, because by and large in Wisconsin we had a number of POWs, especially German POWs here, that were working in the canning industry in southern Wisconsin. And they actually worked not only in the canneries, but they worked on the farms. So I would not be surprised if a German POW camp in the north, where the prisoners weren't working in the woods, because that was a very common practice.
Very good. Lynn, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, Laura Lee, it's your turn from Mesa, Arizona. Hi, Laura Lee.
Hi, Larry. I actually have quite a few pictures in one of my boxes. My grandmother and I used to go through them. My grandfather worked for Buckstaff's, which was right off of Lake Winnebago there on, I think it's Jackson, in Oshkosh. And anyway, I have pictures of some of these log camps. Your last guest was talking about whether they used some of the German POWs. And now that she said that, it dawned on me. I remember one picture where one of the guys was wearing striped pants, and he had a coat on, and it was winter. They were around a big campfire and drinking coffee. But, yeah, I have pictures of the loggers coming down. I think they would come down the Fox River from Green Bay area. And they would...
Well, that's cool.
Load the logs to Buckstaff's, right to the sawmill there.
You know, those are great memory joggers to have those photos. And that's a priceless thing that you have, and I'm sure you're taking good care of them. But just to comment on the Oshkosh area itself, Oshkosh was a first-rate premier woodworking city. Many of the logs that had come down the Wolf River ended up in Lake Winnebago, and then ended up in Oshkosh. So there was a competition between Oshkosh and Fond du Lac as to which had more woodworking industries going. And Oshkosh was a premier woodworking city in its day.
Laura Lee, thanks again for calling and for listening from Mesa, Arizona. Appreciate it. Jeff in Wausau wondered, he wrote in and wondered, how isolated were these camps? For instance, how long did it take to get mail?
You know, that's a good question, because by and large, these camps were quite isolated. Some of them, they were close enough to a city or a village where the lumberjacks could go there on Saturday night or on Sunday, and would be able to get mail. But some of them were so isolated, I don't know when they got their mail, and probably in the spring when they went home. So it varied. But again, the stories of the lumberjacks going into town on Saturday night are memorable, to say the least. and the Sundays, of course, they had off. And even just a comment on Sunday in the lumber camp was just fascinating, because I have pictures in the book of in a bunkhouse. They're shaving this poor Joe with the light of a lantern and a big old steaming bunch of water on the stove, and there he's being shaved on Sunday morning. And they would take their clothes outside and put them in a big old kettle that was over a fire, and they would boil the dickens out of the clothes, because that tended to kill the bedbugs.
Oh my goodness. Phyllis in Elm Grove, let's go to you next. Hi, Phyllis.
Hi. I have a few questions. I'll give you a little background. My grandfather came, he was born in Mülheim, Germany in 1867. And then he came to the United States, and he went to Wabino, Wisconsin, and he worked in the lumber mills, and he died in 1934. But I wanted to just tell you a few of the things, because of some of the interesting things my father told me growing up in Wabino. I know when I was a little child, we'd go visit them. They had this really small, they had 10 children, my grandparents, eight boys and two girls. And anyway, the boys all slept in the upper portion of the house, this little house. But he said it was so poorly insulated that they'd have to wipe the snowflakes off a little bit in the morning. But they didn't have no indoor plumbing, no indoor heat, of course. And one thing that in those days that I always found was quite strange when we'd go to visit was the sidewalk in front of their house was wooden planks. And, of course, there was an outhouse, and I thought that was strange to go across the yard to go to the bathroom, but whatever. And then the other thing was, it was so cold that he said they would run down in the morning and dress in the kitchen, because that's the only place there was any warmth. And the other thing that he told me was that One of the popular things, or one of the things they ate quite a bit growing up, was sauerkraut sandwiches made with lard. I can't imagine sauerkraut lard sandwiches he talked about. But anyway, he talked about in the summertime when he would work, when he got older, and he'd work at the lumber mill. He said, too, they would actually stay in the bunkhouse, and there would be bed bugs. And he said they weren't old enough to smoke, but the guys who were used to burn the bed bugs with their cigarettes.
Well, Phyllis, thanks for calling. Comment, Jerry.
Those are great stories. That house that you are referring to is very similar to the one in which I grew up. I have to fess up and say, because we didn't have electricity, and we heated with wood stoves, and the snow came in the windows in our upstairs bedroom. But that's a whole other story. So I really appreciate these stories. Oh, they're wonderful, because there are so many. I have a bunch of them in my book, but there are so many stories associated with the logging industry, and they are wonderful. We have not talked about Paul Bunyan, and we've not talked about the Hodag, but there were these invented stories as well that were all through the logging camps during that time. The idea that the loggers didn't have much for entertainment, mind you, as they're stuck out really clearly in the wilderness in the logging camp, and so they made their own fun. Occasionally somebody had a fiddle, and so they would play the fiddle, and of course they would play some cards, but it was a really fascinating time.
Thanks again. Appreciate your call, Phyllis. Nancy in Grafton, your turn. Hi, Nancy.
Well, hi. When I was a little kid, I lived up in Marathon County, and I took a train down to Milwaukee to see my aunt down there. On the way back on the train, the conductor said, "Mosady, if you can't spell it, you can smell it," because they had a paper mill there in Mosady.
You're talking about the paper mill.
The Wisconsin River, you know. I never forgot that.
That's a great story.
Yeah. Well, the paper industry is another entire history, which I did not write about it, because it would take another book to talk about the paper industry. That still, Wisconsin is still the premier paper-producing state in the nation. And the paper industry, of course, as we mentioned earlier, grew out of the logging industry. So they are first cousins, but it has its own history.
Nancy, thanks again. Appreciate it very much. I want to give Luann a chance from Germantown to join in. Hi, Luann.
Oh, hello. I also, as a little girl, we would vacation up north on a lake called Oxbow Lake. It was in a town of Weingar, and that was the name of the town years ago. It was 2 miles from the Michigan border. It had a DNR walleye rearing pond because of the way it was situated. And I was wondering if Jerry's research had ever taken him up to Weingar in, that would be Vilas County. Since I had, over the years, actually probably by my teenage years, the townspeople changed the name from Weingar to Presque Isle, Wisconsin.
I did not talk about that specific town. I should say that many, many of the villages and cities across all of northern Wisconsin were the result of the logging industry. I should say that. And Tomahawk and Rhinelander and Eau Claire and Menominee and all across the north, they were all connected in one way or another to the logging industry. Either they had a sawmill, or that's where a logging camp was nearby. Anyway, that's how many of our northern Wisconsin cities, that's how they got started.
Yeah, Woodruff was another one of those towns.
Oh, yeah, I can name them all. Wisconsin Rapids, Nina, the whole schmear. As far south as places like Iola in Waupaca County, they had a sawmill. See, the central Wisconsin, where I have my farm, west of Wild Rose, I'm right on the southern edge of the white pine growing area. I have some native white pine on my farm. I run a tree farm, by the way, and I need Jill's help with my... I have four chainsaws. None of them start, and they all need sharpening.
Well, I tell you what, you've come to the right place because Chainsaw Jill can take care of your needs, by golly. Jerry Apps, our guest today. Jerry is the author of When the White Pine Was King. Always a pleasure to talk with you, Jerry. Oh, man. It's always great to talk with him. And Jill, get your sharpening gear out because Jerry needs his chains sharpened.
And, I am on my way up.
We need to sharpen up our listeners' knowledge of Wisconsin Public Radio as well in the fall member drive. You can count on the Ideas Network for great talk, and it's your gift to any amount that makes the difference for us. So you are the largest source of funding for our programs, and that's why your support at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 is so important.
And nice transition there, Larry. Like that. If you have already renewed or make ongoing monthly gifts as a sustainer, thank you. And listeners who renew and our monthly sustainers are the backbone of WPR.
Yeah, and if you haven't given yet, you can join thousands of other WPR members by donating. Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. We have a little goal of 30 calls this, and we've got, I don't know how many, a few, four, I think.
A few, we got four, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But there's still room for you.
Absolutely.
At WPR.org.
And you know what? You might not have a life coach or a personal trainer or a Wisconsin icon like Jerry Apps on speed dial, but when you listen to the Ideas Network, you do. And what's the cost to you? Well, you choose. The Ideas Network is your source of helpful information. So support it now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And you can ask for your pair of WPR pint cups. These steel, clean canteen cups, I guess, are perfect for showing off your WPR pride. Whether you're enjoying your favorite beverage outside or staying hydrated throughout the day, it starts with your gift at of $20 a month or more at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
One listener made their donation and said, "We could live without WPR, though we sure wouldn't want to." Well, maybe you feel the same way, that listening to WPR makes your life better.
And it might be keeping up with the news, or maybe it's enjoying music, the laughs you get from the weekend shows, or maybe the fascinating discussions on the Ideas Network. Always something good to listen to.
Absolutely, because WPR makes your life better. Help keep it going with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. It's so important.
Maybe you've never given to WPR before. Today, you can find out how good that feels, right, Joe?
Absolutely, and it feels great, but you won't know until you do, and we all need a little something to make us feel great these days. You'll be supporting something you love, something you use, and something you rely on every single day. And because the largest source of funding for WPR comes from listeners like you, you know that your donation truly makes a difference. So is this the time that you make your first ever gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552?
Hi, I'm Jennifer Andreka, and I live in Madison. I started listening when I was a grad student here in 1976. I think I became a member when I returned to Madison as an adult. One reason I love listening is that I'm interested in a lot of different things, and WPR always has a lot of different things. I can hear everything from politics to gardening to travel information. I love just hearing that variety of things.
Give now so you can hear more of the programs you love. Go to WPR.org and click donate. Thank you.
Just give at WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. Larry Mueller here with Jill Nadeau. Listener support, we keep saying it, it's the biggest source of funding for the programs you rely on, and that's why your support during this drive is so important. And your gift might be $10 a month, might be $100 a month. Whatever amount you choose is the right amount.
And supporting Wisconsin Public Radio right now is a great thing to do with a few minutes of your time. All we need is your name, your contact information, how much you'd like to give, and how you'd like to pay.
Your gift supports the stories and the programs that keep you connected to the world. So if you haven't done it yet, do it right now. Give at WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.
Everyone should make the gift that works for them. And for you, that could be a gift of $100 or $200 a month.
Maybe that's what you pay for cable or maybe your family phone plan. Listening to WPR is something you do every day, but put a value on that, like the other things that are important to you. Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.
Your gift right now says, I value the Larry Mueller Show. I want more of it. It makes me think. It makes me laugh. You fill in the blank about how you feel when you hear this show. Those are powerful feelings, and you make a powerful statement when you support what you value, what you believe in. Give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And, you know, Jill wanted to offer up her services as a chainsaw sharpener if people donated $200 or more. But I talked her out of it. She was there and ready. I said $200 may be too much for some people. Yeah, Wisconsin Public Radio works on the honor system. You don't have to pay for it. But when you do choose to support it, you make all the programs you enjoy possible. So have your chainsaw sharpened somewhere else and give a gift right now. Maybe it's $10 a month. I don't know.
Absolutely. You decide the amount and then go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We're listener supported here, listener powered. That's why your gift now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 is so important.
So you support Wisconsin Public Radio and ask for your pair of WPR pint cups. They're really cute. They have coordinating geometric designs, and you'll love for WPR. Your love for WPR will be on full display with every sip. They're yours when you give $20 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And Jill's been sipping quite a bit from her pint.
I knew you were going to go there, Larry. I just knew it.
Hey, by the way, if you're a sustaining member, thanks a lot for that. Make today maybe the day you increase your support of WPR by $5 or $10 a month, whatever amount you choose, at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Elizabeth in DeForest says, thank you so much for what you provide. I don't know what I would do without you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And Matt in Windsor says, Larry clearly has such a love and appreciation for our community and our natural environment. It's a joy to listen every day.
Well, I tell you what, it is a joy. And Jill and I and Jane and Natalie and Tyler, we all have a lot of fun doing this program and hosting it to give you sometimes a laugh, always some good information that you can use. I want to thank you if you've already supported us during this drive. If you haven't supported us yet, this would be a great time to do it. Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. We have to go away right now, but still time for you. Make your contribution, WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.